You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Show brought to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. And for this week, we have Last Word on Sports rugby editor Catherine Cole joining us too. How are you doing, guys?
Good, thanks.
Not bad, thank you.
We are going to start with the weekend's roundup of Premiership action, and Harlequins kicked off the weekend winning against Sale 16-14. Worcester beat Newcastle Falcons 28-20. London Irish had a big defeat against Bath 14-45. Northampton lost to Saracens 6-12. Exeter beat Leicester Tigers 19-6. And Wasps beat Gloucester at the Rico Arena 23-3. Rob, I'm going to come to you first. What was the standout game for you this weekend?
Worcester-Newcastle. I think Worcester have had a great start to the season. They now have 10 times as many points as London Welsh got all of last year. So I think Dean Ryan and the guys down there are doing a great job. I mean, it's not going to all go their own way, but I think they are developing that team and they're going to be scrapping for it. On the flip side of that, I think Newcastle are in a bit of trouble at the moment, and they need to start getting some points together. Otherwise, it's going to be a very long season for them.
Yeah, obviously at the start of the season, Dean Ryan said that Worcester were here to compete, and they were wanting to do a lot better than London Welsh did last season. At the minute, they are in sixth place in the table. They are above Sale, above Wasps. They've had a great start to the season, haven't they, Kate?
Definitely. I think everyone's quite sort of impressed by what's happened. I think there's a really good atmosphere at the club at the minute. Everyone's really positive, and especially the comparison to London Welsh, they're in the running from the start, whereas in Welsh were out of it very, very quickly last year. So I think it's been a great start for them, and it's really positive.
Yeah, obviously going back a couple of weeks, they had that amazing start against against Northampton Saints. They put them at the post and won with just a point in it. Do you think that they've set the bar for themselves and they're gonna continue this form all the way through the Premiership?
I think they definitely can.
They can. I don't think they'll be able to get the wins on a regular basis. I still think it'll be a tough ask for them, but I think they will compete, which I think is what was most disappointing about London Welsh. They didn't just get relegated. They almost went down without a fight. And with this Worcester, they're going to fight and they're going to claw and they're going to get points where they can. So I think they will be there and thereabouts come the end of the season in that mix with Newcastle and London Irish by the looks of things, but they won't be going down without a fight like London Welsh did.
Definitely not. Kate, what match stood out for you this weekend?
I was down at the Stoop on Friday night to see Quins versus Sale. Can't say it was a particularly standout match, especially from Quins. It was quite a disappointing performance, but Danny Cipriani in that match was just something special.
Yes.
So that was a massive standout for me. He missed 2 kicks late on in the game, which would have given Sale the win, but that aside, his kicking from hand was just incredible, and it was complete schooling to Quins. We were very lucky to get the win. Sale played very, very well indeed.
Good. What about the Northampton Saracens match, Kate? Obviously, Saracens are at the top of the table at the minute, but I think people were expecting Saints to put up a bit more of a fight.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it throws up in the air a bit. We're 4 weeks in and Northampton are sitting mid-table, especially as we're just talking about Worcester and things. It's quite open at the minute, and although Saracens have come out from 4 wins from 4, we expected that. They're Saracens, that's what they do. So I definitely think sort of Saints' start of the season has given everyone a chance to get back in it and to not let those two sort of claw away with the lead early on.
Yeah, they've only won one match from four, so the guys at Franklin's Gardens, who 2 years ago were championship holders and, you know, had a equally good a season last year, what do you think is going wrong there? Do you think that the pre-season has affected them, that the World Cup? Do you think the integration of international players has just affected their play so early on in the season?
I don't think it's that, because every team's had that, so I think that's a poor excuse if that's what they were to say. I don't think Saints will be looking to give up any excuses, they'll be looking to turn it round, but I think anyone making that excuse for them would, you'd actually say there are as many, if not more, players in other teams that have come back and that are doing well. I mean, I think that's it's something, the World Cup's something everyone's had to deal with, so I think the World Cup is not an excuse for any team suffering a poor start to the season.
Yeah.
Just on Northampton, obviously they've got the European Cup coming up, but to turn it around, they've got the games are going to start coming thick and fast. They've got Gloucester next and Bath after that. They're not going to be easy games.
No, and I think for the teams this season, it's back to back all the way through till June, July time. So there is no room for error, is there?
No.
Let's just go back to the London Irish versus Bath game. This was a big match, purely because of the red card that happened so early on. Do things like this, obviously a red card means that London Irish were down to 14 players so early on, and then Scott Steele, who obviously came on at scrum half, then went off as well with a rib injury. So basically they were, you know, Irish were left without a traditional scrum half. You know, I think I'm trying to think who it was who came in for them. But, you know, with a going up against a team with such prestige like Bath, is there any chance for players to be playing out of position? And if so, were London Irish just unlucky with that red card, or do you think it was deserving? Kate, I'm going to come to you first.
I mean, I think when you're matched up as underdogs with a team like Bath, to get a red card so early on is going to hit morale, it's going to hit momentum, and these games at the minute are so much about building momentum. I mean, I saw on the Stoop at Friday, as soon as Quinn's got a bit of momentum, that was the point that they needed to sort of secure the win. So I think getting a red card so early on as underdogs really does sort of knock the team back, and I don't think they ever really recovered or were able to get back in the game from that. It was a fairly sure win for Bath from that point onwards.
Yeah, and there was six tries in it. Rob, do you think Bath just ran away with the game after that setback for London Irish?
It's always going to be hard when you're down a man in rugby. It's not like football, you can just dig in and defend for it. We saw in the World Cup final, even the best team in the world, New Zealand, when they went down to 14 men, Australia came back at them. They scored their tries during that period. It's a big advantage, and when you get a red card, it is always going to lead to points on the board. But I think it probably was just about deserved, the red card. I think refs shouldn't be afraid of using it. I think sometimes we see them too eager just to give out a yellow card when perhaps a red is deserved. It can be sometimes a cop out almost. It's like, okay, I can send you to the bin for 10 minutes and I'm not going to get a stick for getting a red card, even if it was a red card offence.
I think especially now as well, in the light of the World Cup and everything that's happened with reffing after the World Cup, and I think there's a lot of sort of pressure on Premiership refs to be making the right decisions, and a red card is a game-changing decision, so it's not something people go to easily. So it's good that there is the sort of motivation there to give it if it's needed, and that refs aren't scared to.
Yeah, and obviously the laws are there to be enforced when the passage of play is against the rules, and obviously McKibben was sanctioned rightly for that. Another red card was shown in the Wasps-Gloucester match. Wasps getting the win 23-3 over their counterparts at the Ricoh Arena. It was Lorenzo Cittadini this time who seemed to punch 12 trees on the deck. And, you know, I think here at Last Minute, well, here in Absolute Flanker, we're not the greatest fans of Billy 12 Trees, but to be fair to him, he did get up and carry on. And then it was the TMO, was it, who actually realised that the punch had taken place. And quite rightly so, it's just unsportsmanlike. And I think for 12 trees to carry on and not make too big of an issue out of it was, you know, credit to him. But again, Cittadini, I think he is he's looking to for a few weeks suspension for that, don't you think?
It, well, in all likelihood, when that goes before the exciting, obviously they will look at that and they will give him a decent length ban. But it's I mean, you actually had two in that one because Hala Fuanu also was sent off for Gloucester. So a flurry of red cards this weekend.
Yeah, I think for Gloucester it was a little bit of a down day. It wasn't the greatest day at the office. I think those two sightings will take place this week. One's on Thursday and Cittadini's is on Wednesday. So we'll see what happens at the panel hearings for them, and we'll bring you the news of the suspensions and whatever happens with those. Let's just quickly have a look at the Exeter Tigers match. Tigers, it was their first loss of the season. Chiefs were just outplayed them. They were very strong in their forward pack. They just seemed to outdo all of, outrun Tigers in every single way possible. And I think all the work that Tigers have done over the summer and pre-season and in the first three games, they just seemed to undo it, didn't they, Rob?
Yeah, it's a tough sort of loss for Tigers. They'd started so well. They'd got a bit fortunate on occasion, but they'd come away with the wins, which is what you need to do. So this will be a bit of a reality check. There's no team going to run away with this Premiership this year. I think we're going to see something very much like last year, where there's six or maybe even seven teams that are going to fight for the playoff spots. So Exeter are going to be one of those again. They finished very well last year. They made some good signings this year, and they're going to be a good side. It's going to be tough, and yeah, Tigers need to learn from this defeat and move forward rather than. As we've said, it's so back to back this year. There's no time to dwell.
Yeah, Kate. Obviously, Tigers clinched that win over Harlequins at Welford Road a couple of weeks ago. Do you think that they perhaps were a little bit on the lucky side in that game? And do you think Exeter were just too good for them to chance that luck again this weekend?
I mean, I think so. It seems like Quinn's actually played very, very well that game, and there's been a lot of controversy afterwards on reffing decisions and penalty calls, and I mean, we were lucky not to take the game at the end. But it's nice to see Exeter sort of playing Tigers their own game. Like, they won fair and square, their pack was strong, they threw the ball around. That's what Tigers usually do well, and it's quite nice to see a team really challenge them and producing a nice game of rugby rather than anything else. So I think Tigers should be wary. They were defeated this weekend. It was a narrow win against Quins, but I don't think it's anything to particularly worry about. They're Tigers. They'll come back fighting. They always get better at the end of the season. We all know that Tigers are the team you kind of fear towards the end. Yeah. So I don't think it's anything to particularly worry about.
Okay. We're going to move to the Pro 12 now. And Connell played Treviso and won 33-19. Leinster got a narrow win against Scarlets 19-15. Ospreys had a big win against Zebra at 36-3. Cardiff lost 30-35 to Glasgow Warriors. Edinburgh lost narrowly again 14-16 to Munster. And Newport Gwent Dragons lost at home 12-19 to Ulster. Rob, obviously Pro 12 is thrown the contention and the competition really wide so far this season. What game stood out for you? And obviously Zebra have been on that winning streak, and they went down to Ospreys at home.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pick four results for out here because of something that I picked up on. Connacht, Leicester, Munster and Ulster all won. So all four Irish provinces won, and all four are in the top five of the Pro 12 table right now.
Yeah.
So obviously a good start to the season for all the Irish sides. I think the Scarlets actually breaks up them taking all four top spots. So it's very interesting. Obviously Ireland a bit disappointed with their World Cup in the end. I think they felt they could get to at least the semi-finals, but at home they're obviously doing very well.
Yeah, Kate, the obviously the integration across all leagues throughout Europe and actually worldwide from the World Cup, it was a bit of a come down for Ireland and the guys going back to their respective clubs. Do you think this has had a big influence on the Pro 12 and like Rob just said, the Irish teams in particular?
I think so. I think there's so much sort of team spirit in Ireland, and it really is a country where you're with your club for life, and there is a lot of national pride, don't get me wrong, but there's also a lot of club pride, and I think people are coming back sort of fighting on the back of a disappointing but yet still positive sort of World Cup for Ireland. I mean, the Welsh teams have really established themselves in the Pro 12. It was starting to look good, and Ireland have really sort of come back in the last couple of weeks, so it's looking pretty good for the Irish teams.
Yeah, let's just speak upon Glasgow, because they managed to beat Cardiff Blues at home. So Cardiff Blues were at home, sorry. And Glasgow managed to go there. There was a lot of points on offer, and actually it was only 5 points in it. So Cardiff get the bonus losing point, but Glasgow, you know, similarly get a bonus winning point, because they went there, they played the standard of rugby that they know they can play. Again, with the international players coming back into their side, and we know Glasgow and Edinburgh were heavily hit by guys going out to the Scotland team. They've had them players back. What do you think they've learnt from that World Cup experience, Rob? And, you know, how much of an influence is that been on, especially this game against Cardiff? They went there, they played the rugby they know they're capable of, and, you know, in the end they got the win.
I think they're looking, obviously from Scotland, will take a lot of confidence from their World Cup campaign. I think Scotland were a bit underdogs, and they got to the quarterfinals, which is what I think their minimum aim would have been, but they competed with Australia, something that Wales and England didn't do to the same level, so that would have given them confidence. I think Cardiff are really struggling, although they have 5 bonus points, which is actually more than any of the top 4 clubs at the moment. So they're competing in these games. They're just finding it hard to get those wins at the moment.
Yeah, Catherine, do you think that Cardiff can somehow come back from this, and obviously going into the European games in the next couple of weekends, do you think that it's almost a fresh start for them? They can leave the Pro 12 behind for the minute and just focus on the European matches?
I'd hope so. I mean, they're sitting there 11th with only 1 win, which obviously isn't a great start. But as we said, those bonus points are all important. If you look at sort of Glasgow and Edinburgh, they're on the same level wins, but Glasgow are 4 points clear on the bonus point. I think they have to take that as positive, that although it's 1 win, they have been competing and they still are able to compete. It is a new competition. It's probably a break for them at the right time.
Yeah.
To sort of break up that momentum and hopefully get them back on a winning track. And they can really, I think they need to take it at a fresh start. And hopefully they can bring success in that back into the Pro 12.
Yes, hopefully. We're going to leave that there then, and we're going to move on to the news now. And I think the biggest news of the week, Sam Burgess has left Bath Rugby and returns to South Sydney Rabbitohs after a code switch disappointment. Obviously, he switched to Rugby Union ahead of the 2014-15 season. Played in the World Cup. Mass disappointment there on his behalf, and obviously on the behalf of England and the RFU as well. Rob, let's come to you first. Do you think this has come as a shock and a surprise? And secondly, do you think this is the right decision?
No and yes. I don't think it's really that much of a shock. I think I think it is the right move, yes. I think he's been let down by Rugby Union in a way that he was parachuted into the England team at 12 because England don't have an international 12. There isn't anybody of standard there. And those people that are going on about Luther Burrell and Billy Twelve Trees need to take a good long look at those players and ask, are they really international players? And I think you'll find the answer is absolutely not. I'll throw Kyle Eastman in there as well. It seems that a lot of people wanted him to fail, and I'm kind of sick of the hypocrisy as sort of, oh, it's disappointing he's gone back after there was so much sniping in the wake of the World Cup, and even in the lead up from certain ex-England players. So I think he's gone there, he's gone back to play with his brothers, his fiance's Australian, he's got a good relationship with South Sydney. I mean, wouldn't you want to go and play in Sydney rather than in Bath?
Yes, it's I mean, you know, come January, where would you rather be playing? Would you rather be playing in miserable England and it being cold, or nice sunny Sydney? I do agree with you there that it's not a shock, and part of me thinks, would you have expected someone of his stature, and you know, he comes with such a heavy price tag. I mean, he was on £500,000 at Bath, and he's gone back to South Sydney Rabbitohs, rumoured to be a lot more than that. He comes with such a big price tag. There was such a heaped amount of pressure on him at the World Cup, and you know, at Bath Rugby as well. He was changed around in different positions. He, you know, he was he played in the forward pack, and then he was part of the England squad at 12. My feeling is that anybody with half an ounce of self-respect wouldn't continue playing in a game that they're not comfortable with, partly because of the media scrutiny, partly because of the fans' disappointment in him. And you know, if you've got the choice of playing a sport that you are very familiar with, you've loved it, you're very successful in it, or you're going to stick around for a further 2 years and be scrutinised and every part of your play being picked apart for you know, not much joy out of that, you know, you can't really blame him, can you, Kate?
Not at all. I mean, he even said today, it's come out in all his statements, his heart's in rugby league. And I guess when you come from being so high in stature in that sport and having the prestige and then coming across the union, and ultimately we have absolutely slammed him. He's been completely targeted by the media, by ex-players, by everyone, and that wasn't necessarily Lancaster that was getting targeted.
No.
It was Burgess for Lancaster's call, and I said I was never particularly a Burgess fan, but even after the first sort of couple of World Cup matches, he's not necessarily doing anything wrong. He's just new to the game, and for the press, for everyone to just give him so much criticism.
He did play well against Fiji when he came on. He did actually play well against Wales. He went toe-to-toe with Jamie Roberts all game and didn't come, and we were winning when he came off. I think a lot of the media and ex-players treated him like a complete rugby novice and said, oh, he's never played rugby before. I've played both codes. They aren't that different. Tackling, passing, kicking, these things are all the same in both codes. He has the skill, basic skills there. And to sort of dismiss him as novice was disrespectful by a lot of the media. And as I said, yeah, he was then lumped with the blame of the World Cup failings when it wasn't his fault. He actually played reasonably well. I think actually Stuart Lancaster made a critical error, not in picking him, but in picking him and Barrett together, because they're two similar players, and that's what was the wrong choice. Rather than, he could have picked Burgess and picked Slade outside him, as we saw against France. Those two actually played quite well together. And then I think Lancaster then hung him out to dry a bit by not picking him in the squad against Uruguay, sort of saying, oh yeah, I got that wrong, it was all Sam's fault, sort of thing. I think that was a bit unfair on him, because why was Brad Barrett and Joseph Squad, if you were testing out new players and new combinations, you know what they can do.
Yeah, it's almost like you've both said, it isn't that he particularly played badly, it was the fact that so much expectation was on his shoulders to be this, you know, superstar, to have the so-called X factor that's been bandied about throughout the English media. It's not the fact that he didn't play very well, it's the fact that he didn't play as well as people had hoped. And it's almost like he's become the scapegoat for England's demise in the World Cup.
And what you just said there, it's not that he didn't play well, he didn't play amazing, but you could lump that at every England player, possibly bar Mike Brown. I think Mike Brown actually was the one player that's come out of this tournament, bit of credit. Maybe Watson and May as well actually played okay, but outside the back three, I don't think anyone comes out of this World Cup with any credit.
No, Kate, you mentioned that a statement from Sam Burgess has come out today. He's said as well, some ex-players just kept letting rip. It's almost like they don't want anyone else to do well in the jersey. I didn't want to stay in a sport like that, and that is really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really sad for our game. And there's enough people that criticise rugby league for the money and for the sort of attitude of the players towards the money there. But to see someone basically forced out of rugby union is just not something we want to see, especially when we've got examples like you were saying of 12 trees carrying on after being punched to the floor the other day or whatever. Like, we're a sport we're proud of, and we're a sport I think a lot of people respect. And it's sad that it's come to this stage that he feels he can't play union anymore.
Yeah, you look at the five. Obviously the England World Cup, the five key words that were bandied around every single World Cup venue and everything, and one of those words was respect. And you just think, you know what, whether you're a fan, an ex-player, a pundit, a journalist, or you're a player yourself in the team, respect is the underlying factor of rugby union, like you've just said, Kate, and it almost feels like that is the last thing he received.
Absolutely, especially in comparison to sort of football. We pride ourselves on respect. You go to a football game and it's not, yay, my team are winning. It's critique of the other team. And
yeah,
rugby is the gentleman's game, and we force the gentleman out the game. And I think a lot of people have a role to play in that. That's not just the ex-players. And it's completely been latched onto. It just shows the negative side the media can have in our sport. And it's a disappointment. I'd love to see him come and prove everyone wrong, because I was a critic, don't get me wrong, but I'm a critic that likes to be proved wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, you said something about Mike Brown there, and it's also come out in the media in the past couple of days that he has, you know, fired shots at certain people, who, you know, ex-players, people in the media as well. What was, obviously, you know, you you mentioned it earlier. What other light can you shed on that?
He sort of had a sort of saying there's not as much, he doesn't trust the England players as much because of all the leaks that came out of the dressing room, because of basically players taking shots in the media but not willing to put their name on it. So people having a pop at Sam Burgess saying that, okay, well, we all thought Luther Burrell should have been in there, things like that. I'm not sure, I think the England, those players have taken too many hits to the head, but yeah, I think he's right in that sense. If you're going to be part of a team, you have the right to criticise, but have the guts to put your name on it as well.
I think that also says a lot about Mike Brown.
Mm.
We've come from the days, well, though Quinn's fans will remember back at Stoop when he was young, he had a big temper on him and he was the first to a fight, and he really has grown up and sort of grown into the England role. For him to step aside and put a comment across like that, it just does show he's matured and grown into what is now sort of one of the best 15s in the world. I think it says a lot for him that he can sort of separate himself from that and keep sort of a square head on him when we all know he has a bit of a temper, and that was his liability when
he was
younger.
Definitely. And it's you know, just picking up on his point as well, it's accountability. And like you say, if you're going to fire these accusations around, then the least you can do is put your name to it and, you know, back yourself up in what you're saying. And the fact that all these things are being bandied about and all these rumours are coming out in the aftermath of England's disappointing World Cup campaign is almost like, in hindsight, we should have done this and we should have done that instead, or done this better. And you just think, you know what, you didn't, and we just have to leave it there and make the reforms that we can and change the parts of the game and the setup that we need to, and then just move forward, don't we?
Yeah, I'll come back to this sort of overarching point that I don't think anybody in England's squad has any right to criticise anybody at this point. None of them were good enough, really. So I think those players taking shots need to take long, hard looks in the mirror, really. Because at this point, our talent pool was found wanting. Not just our talent, we're not that good compared to the rest of the world. And it's not like we left 15 world-class players sat at home. There weren't the resources there. And I think maybe there needs to be a review into that, really, rather than looking at just the elite. Why aren't we producing the level of player to compete with New Zealand, Australia and South Africa?
Yeah, everyone's a critic, aren't they? Whether they're sat at home or on the field themselves, everyone's a critic, and everyone, you know, is willing to put their opinion across. But like we say, it's just accountability, isn't it? We're going to move on now to the news. Sam Burgess is left Bath. He's gone back to Australia. But Scotland's David Denton has signed for Bath Rugby from Edinburgh. I think he's the 25-year-old has gained 32 caps for Scotland already. He was in their one-point loss to Australia in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. He, for a relatively young guy, has got a wealth of experience, hasn't he, Kate?
Absolutely. I mean, he's come out of it with 4 World Cup games under his belt, and 4 World Cup games in which Scotland can be very, very proud of themselves, and him especially. I think he came across very well. I think it's a big signing for him, especially as we've just said, the media attention is going to be on it in the aftermath of Sam Burgess. But it's a big move, and you hope he's ready for it post World Cup and post the success he really had.
Yeah, he's a back rower, and I think he's been playing with Edinburgh since 2010, and since then he's made 78 appearances in the Pro 12, and he started an impressive 74 of those. So, like I said, for a young guy, he's a big ball carrier, athletic, and obviously he's taken part in Scotland Sevens as well as the 15s game as well. So, Rob, I think he is a big signing for Bath, isn't he?
Yeah, I think obviously they've moved quickly to sort of fill the gap left by Sam Burgess. They needed someone to bring in to give themselves that depth. As we said, it's going to be a tough season. They need to keep that depth in their squad so they can rotate. Yeah, I think it's a good signing. He played very well for me in the World Cup. He just got on with it and did his job well. So I think that was very much sort of what he'll do for the for Bath, and I think they'll get some good results because of that.
Yeah, I think he's going to fit in well at Bath, isn't he? He's going to bolster their back row, and I think he's going to enjoy his time in the Premiership. I think it will suit the style of game that he plays, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to that side.
Yeah, it's nice to see another international join the Premiership. We see so many going out to France and going elsewhere, that to get another young, solid international looking to further their career in England in the Premiership is always going to be a good thing.
Yeah, completely agree. We're going to move on now to the news that the USA Professional Rugby competition is going to begin in April 2016. This is huge news for the American rugby scene. Six teams will take field in 2016. Sanctioned by USA Rugby, and it's nice that after their World Cup campaign, you know, they didn't do too badly. They were perhaps the underdogs in quite a lot of their poor matches, but you know, they fielded some good players. They had some very good phases of play, and I think, you know, they were one of them teams that, for a tier two nation, they put their hand up to be counted, didn't they, Rob?
Yeah, they sort of. They actually played really well, but were sort of overshadowed being in the same pool as Japan, who obviously had their heroics.
Yeah.
They didn't disgrace themselves in any of the games they played. Okay, they didn't get the results they wanted, but I think this is a good positive step towards developing the USA rugby, and I think Canada teams coming in will help as well. Develop rugby in North America, because I think Canada had the same sort of issues. They didn't play badly, but they were in a tough pool, and it sort of went again, things didn't quite fall their way. So I think rugby has got great potential in North America, and I think this is the first step to developing that.
Yeah, Kate, they for such a big country and for being so successful in a lot of other sports, they have got a massive pool of talent there, and the potential for USA Rugby, both at domestic league and international level, is just great, isn't it?
Absolutely, and they're already forming sort of relationships with Premiership clubs. It looks like it's going to be a really promising sort of campaign, and I think it's a great legacy from England 2015 that we have agreed that Tier 2 nations can compete, and to see a Tier 2 nation really start to establish itself and aim for that, I think it says a lot about this World Cup, and people, things like the Japanese performance has really inspired that, and it's great to see that there will hopefully be some competition. You just need sort of the foundations there to foster that talent, because it's got to be out there.
Yeah, of course. And off the back of that, the America's Six Nations tournament is likely to be played in February and March next year. That will involve USA, obviously, Canada, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil and Chile, and I think again that just, you know, expands the involvement of more teams into the sport, and you know, it just takes the sport to another level, doesn't it? Especially with the sevens game being played at the Rio Olympics next year, that, you know, rugby at the minute, whether it's sevens or 15s game, it's just going worldwide, and rightly so. It's really developing at an extensive rate, and for me personally, I'm really looking forward to seeing the likes of Brazil and Chile competing with the likes of Argentina. We can see what wonders it's done for Argentina playing in the rugby championship. So hopefully the up and coming nations like Uruguay and Brazil and Chile, they can benefit from this as well, Rob.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be good to see the Brazil, Chile getting involved, moving their game forward. We've talked about the gap between tier one and tier two that has actually got closer, it looks like, at this World Cup. Does seem that the gap has started to grow between tier two and tier three. You look at the World Cup qualifiers and you see the same old people qualify, and they do it by a long way. So it's getting regular games, not just one qualifier every 4 years, for these teams against that next tier up is only going to help these teams develop further.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're all looking forward to seeing what that can bring, not only for the American Six Nations, but the domestic league as well. It's going to be a great year for American rugby next year, for sure. We're going to move on to the news now that Nick Evans has been awarded a Viva Premiership Player of the Month award. The 35-year-old, he scored a massive 63 points for Harlequins in October. That's more than any other player across the board. Quins won two of their three Aviva Premiership matches in October, and he has been up there in every match. He has been on the stat sheet and really putting his name forward, hasn't he, Kate?
Absolutely. I mean, he had that wonderful club record against Bath with 8 penalties, which is most in Harlequins history. So it's wonderful to see a player of the age of 35 still really doing well and still showing the young ones how it's done. There are a lot of questions back at a couple of years ago at the Stoop as to whether he was sort of past it, and he's just been absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, I said about Danny Cipriani being wonderful on Friday night against Quins, but from the tee, you can't fault Nick Evans. He slots everything, and he really is sort of that force, and he captained the start of the season while Danny Kerr was on World Cup duty, and he's a stalwart of the club, and he's a bit of a legend there now, and I think he's got a lot of respect. So, and of course, his sort of acceptance speech was so wonderfully humble, and which is classic Nick Evans. He said, "It's all for the team. I don't like individual accolades," and he really is a player for the team. I think it's lovely to see him do well and get the recognition he deserves.
Yeah, of course. He beat the shortlist of Don Armand from Exeter and Nathan Hughes of Wasps for the first award of this season. Obviously, he gets his prize, and that he also gets £250 to donate to a charity of his choice, which is obviously is a nice sentiment as well. Rob, do you think this is an incentive for players to up their game, or do you think this is just part and parcel of the match that, you know, they play to win, and then this is a nice little present for them at the end of a month?
I think they're mostly focused on the winning part. Obviously, they want to be the best. They're all competitive people, so I don't think any of them will be too disappointed if they get it, but I think all of them will be giving out their all week in, week out, irrespective of the award, and if it comes, I think it's a bit of a bonus, really.
Yeah, it's going to be nice to see who wins it as the season goes on, and Nick Evans clearly seems to have benefited from the late start to the season due to the World Cup, and like you said, Kate, he was captain at the start of the season in place of Danny Kerr, and he seems to have really had a resounding positivity from that. So yeah, it's going to be great to see what happens for the rest of the season, not only for Nick Evans and Harlequins, but for the other players as well. Just sticking finally with the Premiership news, Richard Cockerill, director of rugby at Leicester Tigers, has said that Manu Tulagi has been offered a new contract. The centre, who is currently out with a groin injury, and that has been long term, is out of contract at the end of the season. After Christmas, he can go to the clubs and see what they've got to offer. But Richard Cockerill told me earlier that there has been an offer put on the table, and it seems to not be a bad one.
Yeah, look, we've put our best foot forward contractually. We're waiting for that decision, and look, I understand, you know, guys have, in the world we live in, they have big decisions to make and what they want to do. But he's a young man. There's lots of rugby left in him. There's another 10 years of rugby left in Manu, and certainly in the next 3 years we'd like him to be here. And we've made that known. He wants to stay. We've made an offer that will make him, up there with the highest paid players in the world. And we're just waiting for that answer. But there's no pressure on him to sign that. We just want it to be right. We want him to stay. He wants to stay. But the world we live in, there's always there's always other distractions, and it's always flattering when you get courted by other people, and we just have to be patient. But we'd like to think that we get sooner rather than later.
He also said that they are looking for a, they're looking to secure a long-term loose head prop. Lugovi Munipola and Michelle Rizzo are currently out with injury, and both of them seem to their injuries seem to be hindering them a lot longer than first expected. Fraser Balmain, who is the traditional tight head prop, has been playing in the number one shirt, and Ricardo Brugnara has been replacing him coming off the bench. But it almost seems at the minute that because of this, these two long-term injuries, they need a strong loose head there to fulfil their requirements, especially going into the European games. Rob, what would you say that, you know, what would you say that Tigers are looking for? Are they looking for, again, that sturdy, strong prop, or do you think they need to go, you know, with all the changes going on at Leicester Tigers with Aaron Major and Scott Hansen, do you think that there is a different approach they can have to signings at the minute?
There is a different approach they can. I think they'll still want a solid scrummager to sort of give them that platform for the other players that they've brought in. I think getting that base is always is key for any rugby team. So I think even if you can be a bit more of a mobile prop, I don't think any team really wants to give up that foundation in the scrum. So if you can do both, you're going to be far more in demand. So yeah, I think there will be maybe a slight change in philosophy, but I think they're still going to look for players with the key skills in those positions.
Yeah, as of recording, which is Tuesday, Matias Aguero is rumoured to be the signing. The Italian prop has obviously been playing with in the World Cup for his national side. Kate, do you think that there is an ethos at Tigers? Obviously, they are so forward pack based, and they are traditionally renowned for being a strong side in that forward pack. Do you think Tigers can afford to look around, or do you think an immediate signing is first and foremost?
I think with Europe on the horizon, if they really want to sort of mount a challenge in the European campaign, the strong scrummage is going to be essential, and that's where teams can fall apart when we're out scrummed. And so an immediate signing, provided these injuries are going to be long term, is probably necessary if they want to mount a strong campaign in Europe. But Tigers do have that experience there, and although they're sort of struck by injury, that there are people there. So if you're looking at a long-term strategy, I don't think there's any problem in looking young or looking slightly more inexperienced, because they do have sort of the resources there to sort of train up and coach up a new prop. So it depends where their priorities lie. If they're really looking at Europe this season, they think they can mount that challenge, then the immediate signing is completely essential. But if they're looking for a long-term campaign, who says a new young sort of bright talent isn't in the picture?
Yeah, exactly. Cog has actually said that there is a deal that apparently the details just need to be tied up, and basically he's looking to sign somebody and have them in the squad, possibly on the bench for Friday's match against Stade Francais. The French side, who won the top 14 last year, travelled to Welford Road for the Friday night fixture. They are so strong in their forward pack. It's almost like Tigers have got to have a prop that is really well experienced to withstand that heavy physical side that Stade Francais are going to bring, Rob.
Yeah, it's really, you need somebody that can sort of soak that pressure up, because they're going to come up against tough pack all season. So they've got to have, I think Gunnar's right in a sense, it doesn't necessarily have to be a complete player, but they need to have that basic skill level and those basic skills that Tigers can train up. So I think it would be good to see somebody young come in, raw maybe, and because these injured players are going to come back. It's not short term in that sense, they're going to be up for a little while, but they're, those players are still there, they haven't gone away.
Yeah, and it's just covering you back in the interim, but again, having someone there that when the likes of Rizzo and Munipola come back, that they are there still to be replacements or compete for the starting spot, aren't they? So, and I think that's what Leicester Tigers are trying to pride themselves on, with all the changes and the different ethos that's going down there. they still want to have a lot of guys competing for the positions in that starting squad. And you know, it's not a bad headache to have, is it, that you've got too many options for certain positions. So yeah, I think for teams across the board, I think that's a nice headache to have, to have too many options for one spot. So what we're going to do now, we're going to preview the European games coming up this weekend. We're going to start with the Champions Cup, and Leicester Tigers do kick it off against Stade Français at Welford Road. US Oynax play Ulster at home. It's Racing Metro 92 against Glasgow Warriors. Munster play Benetton Treviso. Saracens will host Toulouse. Northampton Saints will face the Welsh side Scarlets. Leinster will play Wasps at the RDS Arena. Union Bordeaux will play Clermont-Auvergne. Toulon will play Bath, and Ospreys will play Exeter. A huge list of fixtures there, Rob. I just want you to pick one that will that looks potentially to be a big match.
Toulon-Bath.
Yeah, I think Kate, are you going to agree with that? I think for me, that's it's going to be a big one.
I think this will be a good measure. I mean, obviously a lot's been made, especially by certain club chairmen, about the gap between the French teams and English ones, and those chairmen are looking to sort of get the salary cap to close that gap. I'm not sure that's the way to close that gap, but it'll be a good yardstick, I think, of where the sort of the gap is at this point, because Bath had a reasonable start to the season, so I think they can compete with Toulon, although Toulon have got a vast array of talent to call from.
Yes, Kate, I think the Toulon side are going to be fielding a very, very strong side. Obviously, they're at home as well. Do you think Bath are in contention at all?
I think you can never write them off. But to me, it has to go Toulon's way. They're so dominant. They are such a strong side. They're at home. All the positivity is there. They're coming off a good run. I would probably have my money on Toulon, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think
the Toulon World 15.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was literally just about to say. I think they field a lot of players that would be in a lot of people's dream teams. So,
not many Frenchmen in there these days.
Well, that's true. But
not many Frenchmen in France, to be honest.
They're starting to come over here. Pick them all over. Over next year for Northampton, but I think that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a European exchange going on here, but like we say, we'll pick up on that one another day. Challenge Cup fixtures: Harlequins kick things off against Montpellier. Brive will play Newcastle Falcons. Edinburgh will play Grenoble. Ensider STM will play Connaught. Calvisano will play Cardiff Blues. Worcester are against La Rochelle at home. London Irish will face Argon. Gloucester face Zebra. Pau go up against Castres Olympic, and Newport Great Dragons will face Premiership side Sale Sharks. Kate, going to come to you first. What match stands out for you?
For me, I'm really interested to see the Gloucester game. Gloucester haven't exactly had a great sort of run in this season. It's been pretty disappointing for Gloucester fans. They've had a bad away sort of track record, and they've got two what can be seen as fairly easy games coming up in the Challenge Cup. They're must wins for Gloucester. I don't think there's much they can get out of them because they're expected to win. Mm-hmm. So I think if anyone can sort of push Gloucester, it's really going to start to ruffle some feathers there after what's been a pretty bad start to the season.
And actually, Zebra aren't doing too badly at all. I think they've got in the past 3 weeks they've won two of their games, which you know has surprised a lot of people out there. Travelling to Gloucester, obviously on the road, it is a little bit more difficult, and the fans down at King's Home can create such a fortress to go into and to try and compete in. Rob, do you think the Italian side stand any chance at all?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they've shown this year in the Pro 12 that they stand a chance. They've come away with a couple of good results, and they'll be going into this game full of confidence.
Yeah, I think for me, another game that stands out is Newport Gwent Dragons versus Sale. Both sides sort of could be doing better at the minute, and we'll have a lot to prove in this match. Sale travelling to the Welsh side, do you think that's going to affect them at all, Rob?
No, it's not. It's not exactly a long trip, so I think it'd be a they'll treat it as a in the same way they treat any Aviva Premiership away fixture. So I think as Sale have had some reasonable performances without potentially getting the results they deserved. I think Catherine hinted at that earlier in the show in terms of the Harlequins game last week. So I think they'll be able to overcome Newport.
Yes, Kate. How do you reckon Harlequins are going to do this weekend facing Montpellier?
On the back of a pretty nice start to the season, I'm hopeful. It's a Thursday night game down the Stoop, which is a bit of an odd one. So I'm not sure what the crowd's going to be like. I can't imagine a massive sort of showing there. So that might be quite interesting, sort of taking away the home advantage slightly. But I mean, Harlequins don't want to be in the Challenge Cup. Conor O'Shea has said out and out that we want to be looking for sort of challenging the top four and getting back to old winning ways. So this will be a case of they're looking to really challenge for this. This isn't something that they're looking for decent results. They want to be really putting the mark out and gaining some confidence to go back into the Premiership with and start to sort of make their cause in the Premiership. So.
I think this is an interesting feature because I think Montpellier are very much in the same boat as Quins on this. They're both obviously disappointed with how last season went. They both feel that they have the squads to be challenging in the Champions Cup. And I think it could be an interesting feature to see how this start of this campaign for both of them is going to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting one. Like you said, Kate, it's a bit of a weird fixture as well. Thursday night, we'll see how that pans out. I'm not quite sure it's going to be the turnout of the century, but we'll have to see. And that's it for this week's Absolute Flanker. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you to Rob and Kate as well. Kate, it's been great having you. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You can find out all the information about Absolute Flanker and Last Word on Sports on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/LWSflanker. We're also on Twitter at LWSflanker as well. Rob, what's your Twitter handle?
At LWS Rob.
Kate, what are you on Twitter at?
It's at Catherine M. Cole.
And you can follow me at Molly Ray Maria. You can also follow the Last Word on Sports rugby page on Twitter. That's at LWS Rugby Union. And yeah, let us know what you think of the show, if you've got any news or if you want to join in on the fixtures this weekend. Let us know what your thoughts are. And we'll be back next week with exactly the same thing. And yeah, it'll be great. Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks.
And see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.